The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 247 for Friday, the 1st of October, 2010. My name is Jim Race. I'm here in California. Martin is off flying about somewhere or working on his stuff. So I've got Jules Chisek in his stead, a longtime stalwart for the show. How are you doing, Jules?
Doing good.
Excellent. Excellent. We've got a pretty cool show. No interviews this week, but we've got plenty of to talk about, and we'll certainly get to all that. Before that, I'd like to mention a couple of donations that we got this week, and many, many thanks for those. Ed Hauser, he's a fellow AFM racer. Thanks very much, Ed. Totally appreciate that. And Celeste Kindry out of Canada. Celeste, thanks a bunch. Totally appreciate that as well. It's really, really great to get that kind of feedback. We got a bunch of good email this week, didn't we, Jules?
We did. We did. Let's go through those.
Yeah, cool. Just a couple of mentions here real quick. John Marsh, he runs a deli back in Bath, Pennsylvania. So any of you fans out there, drop by and say hello to John. He's been a longtime listener. He wrote in requesting an off-season show on new riders and bikes, and this is a topic that Mart and I had sort of touched on the other day, and Jules, I'm sure you have some thoughts about that as well. So we'll definitely get on that for the off-season, because we'll certainly have some time to fill in, you know, with the reduced testing schedule. Brian from Guildford, UK wrote in, and was sort of a rejoinder or a confirmation, if you will, about the dirt roads going into the Aragon circuit, and so we've had a note from Len, who ran Moto.gp for quite some time, fans.moto.gp, and he said it was asphalt. Andrew Wheeler showed a picture of a dirt road, and indeed, Brian from Guildford said that he did see a dirt road. Why did he see it? Well, he rode his Triumph Thruxton, all the way from the UK to the hinterlands of the Aragon Circuit and back home again. So brave, interesting, and certainly had a great time there. Even more, Chuck Scarzon, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, he'd written in, he apparently trashed a rental race bike at Little Tally, which is a U.S. circuit that Weir runs at, and he got to buy the company a new one. Now, why, plus he broke his hand in the process, why is that of interest to MotoGP OD folks? Well, Mark Miller has spawned with a bit of a meme his quote-unquote My Shitty Little World of Racing, and that has been dropped into more than a few emails that we've been getting back lately, and I kind of chuckle because I kind of like the term.
I love it.
It's self-deprecating, but it's amusing all at the same time because I can kind of feel the same way being just a club brainer racer slash punter, if you will. And then we had another one, Jules. That one was pretty cool too.
Yes, James Dwight from Australia wrote in. He's a regular at Sepang, and he basically offered, you know, anybody who's going to Sepang round and is going there for the first time, he knows basically the ins and outs of the circuit, where to sit, all that kind of stuff. So he suggested that, you know, if anybody's got questions about Sepang, email us, and we'll forward the email on to James, and James will be very happy to answer and help out. And, of course, you know, meet up with people over there as well.
Absolutely. We can have a Sepang meetup. And, you know, I always encourage that. We kind of tried to get that together over in some of the European rounds, and you almost pulled it off at Birdo.
Tried.
But we
don't have to be there. I mean, like, you know, just pick a spot. We can post it on the Facebook. You guys can come in on the Facebook page, post a note, or just email us, and we'll mention it on the show prior to the round. And, you know, yep, to get together with other fans of the show.
Yeah, you guys can make fun of us from afar without us being able to defend ourselves as well.
There you go.
And as Jules mentioned, the Facebook page is up and jamming and plenty of conversation going on there. So just search for MotoGPOD on Facebook, and happy to talk to you there, as well as an email and all the other venues to get a hold of us. You'll find that we're easily accessible and nearly as chatty through other electronic venues as we are over the air, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But please, no trolling.
Yes. Yeah, Jules and I are both long-time online veterans, and our troll detectors are quite sensitive. So.
we're trying very, very much, I think, to not remove any posts from the Facebook page, because I really want to encourage the discussions, even if there are things that we completely disagree with. But, you know, if it starts to go down a, you know, you guys suck, they suck, you know, whatever kind of conversation, we will have to start stepping in out suck, actually.
Yeah, and we'll think you guys kind of suck, too, if you do that. So, I think what y'all want is that, that was very Southern to me. What you guys want is participation by us. And so, be cool. We'll be cool too. What's going on? We had a fair amount of stuff going on. You know, we've got obviously things coming up this weekend, but we certainly had a great and interesting series of races this last weekend at the Imola circuit, huh?
Yeah, actually we had a bunch of championships that got resolved, here in America. Final round, Barber, and Imola. Well, obviously there was. We'll have to go through the results really quick, and then talk about what that means, because it's for the superbikes that was a wrap up.
Absolutely. And what Jules first mentioned was the AMA Superbike Championship, which wrapped up at Barber, a gorgeous circuit. Those of you folks that are outside of the States, look it up online, check it out. Beautiful, picturesque, and if it was just a little bit longer and had a little bit more runoff, it'd be a fantastic circuit for either GP or World Superbike. But we already have a pair of races, or at least two for GP and one for World Superbike.
At least for 2011, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen after that. And Barber has been kind of mentioned for MotoGP.
It has.
Before, but I have a feeling that it would be a lot of work to get that track to MotoGP standards.
It would, but the interesting thing is the gentleman that runs it is massively dedicated to motorcycles.
Yes.
The museum there is basically probably one of the most world class as far as the amount of motorcycles that are in it and the quality and quantity that are there. Fantastic stuff. So if you ever make it to the States, make sure that you put that on your list of places to stop. But yeah, it doesn't have its FIM certification yet, and that's step number one, if you will.
So we'll have a full report at the end of the show from Skylar Vicroy, who did a AMA report before, and he did a really nice job on the AMA season wrap-up. So we'll have that towards the end.
Very cool.
Thanks, Skylar.
Yeah, many thanks to Skylar. He's been pushing that on us, and we've been kind of spazzing on it, but very, very cool to get that kind of content from you folks. What do you want to talk about, Jules? Should we go through Imola?
Let's do Imola.
All right, Imola. Very, very kind of classic circuit. Always puts together some great racing, and there's no doubt that it is a very bumpy circuit.
It is, but it's bumpy, but it's also predictably bumpy. I think the last 3 years, you could definitely tell the superbike guys, especially, have figured out exactly where all those bumps are, because I don't know what the corners are called, unfortunately, but you're going downhill. They used to take a much wider line, but there's a bump there, so they started going on the brakes a little earlier and cutting through. And it's so when a track like I think, for example, Casey Stoner complaining about Indianapolis and MotoGP, that track actually changed. It got more and more bumpy, and the bumps are in different places, and so it's like every time they go there, they get little surprises. Whereas this track is basically has had the same character for decades.
The bumps are just migrating slower.
Probably, yeah.
There's no doubt that they have adapted over time, and if those of you that have watched the races from there over the last few years or whatever. And as Jules says, have been able to see these guys actually make the changes necessary. And in fact, you can kind of watch the suspension from races that occur there, and it's clear that they've got things set up a little bit softer, as probably more perfectly shown by the way that for both races, Sykes on the Kawasaki was basically just kind of floating around a few corners there.
Oh, my God. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful stuff.
It was really cool. And in fact, we don't really have it in the notes, but I do just want to kind of wave the Kawasaki flag for this particular race weekend, because obviously you got pole in the wet. Yes, a bit of an anomaly, but the one thing that Tom Sykes did in both races, and we'll go through the results here momentarily, was not only start from the pole, but keep near the front of the field, not only in race one for, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, 8 laps, but in race two, he was up there for the majority of the race. And so, well done.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Hats off. And that was very cool. And hopefully a portent of things to come if, God forbid, Kawasaki finally comes through on their promises and produces a bike that will run at the world level for with the new CX-10 for 2011.
You said God forbid?
Well, we've always been dreaming every year that they're actually going to do it, and we get all excited and it doesn't happen. So maybe if I try a little reverse theological, it's like, you want to run through race one?
Sure. So, like Jim just said, Tom Sykes was on pole, and he made the most of it. He had a whole shot. He led the race. It was obvious in race one that he wasn't going to be able to keep it up because everybody was kind of lining up behind him, but he was doing an incredible job taking advantage of the Kawasaki's strengths, especially in its it is a fast bike. It's definitely a fast bike. I think it's just not as good as the other bikes coming out of corners. But he was riding a very defensive line the whole time, but they really started backing up behind him. And the guy who really was... well, obviously he did well because he won both races, was Carlos Checa. He didn't have a good start in the first race, but he was just plowing through the field. He was the first one that actually got past Sykes. Yeah. And that after that, the floodgates kind of opened. I think that Sykes, had to, Mule Hodgson, who was doing some of the commentary for Eurosport, was saying that, on the last lap, you can do a very defensive line because it doesn't matter what your lap time is going to be. But in the middle of the race, you do have to keep a certain line, which sometimes does open the door. And people started to take advantage of that. The other riders started taking advantage of that and started passing Tom. So he actually ended up, way down in sixth. But like you said earlier, he was up front for the longest time, and he was in second for a long time, and he really made it hard for the rest of the guys. But it was good.
That was cool having I really enjoyed having Neil on. He's got a bit of a dry wit and an inside line in some of these guys, and he came out with some zingers, man.
Oh man, he was really fun. He was very fun.
And I swear, Tom's performance in these races totally reminded me of back when I was racing, because I was always the leader of the second group and pretty much provided the train that nobody could get around because I'm all tall and lanky.
That's right. Yeah, sticking your legs out in every direction.
Pretty much. travel on, sir.
Yeah, and actually him and Haslam, I think, probably did the most incredible drifting together, some of those corners. But the other surprise was Lanzi. Lanzi was...
He was pretty far. Actually, both races had some interesting starts, and there were guys that were able to barge to the front of the field.
Like Haga, I think, was like 15th or something in both races. Obviously, he was 15th on the grid.
Yeah, but the same thing. If you remember in race one, that Biaggi got basically a little bit tangled up back in the pack, and basically at the end of lap one, he was in 14th, something like that.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that bad right away. He actually just kept getting worse and worse. He looked really tentative in the beginning, and it cost him because people kept, just barging past him. The rest of the field didn't have a championship to win. The only person who could catch him was Leon Haslam. And, so they were just barging through, like, I don't care,
True.
And so he just kept getting pushed off. He made a couple of mistakes, and so he ended up, way down the field. In 14th, and finally, thanks to some retirements and maybe two passes, he did end up in 11th, but that was a terrible race for him. Really, really bad first race.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it kind of raised a bit of a question. Is this going to be a weekend that really tightens things up? But
I mean, you know, think about the pressure. He's coming in, you know, one thing that I didn't realize before the weekend, something that I didn't know, I didn't realize that there's never been an Italian champion in World Superbikes.
Well, it's not that old of a championship.
Okay. I know, but still, I mean, come on, they're Italians, right?
True, and it is to some degree. Some people say that it is an Italian championship. that term has been bandied about before, but
anyway, so it's Italian bike, Italian rider at an Italian round, you know, with basically the chance to win the championship right there and then in front of all the fans, and so the pressure was ridiculous on Biaggi. And he kind of folded up in the first race. He a lot of those mistakes were totally his own mistakes.
Yeah, no doubt. He went off track twice, I believe, in race one. Did he not?
Yep.
And the fans were clearly. You're absolutely right. The fans were clearly kind of waiting, and it did. But as I said before, it did kind of create a weird little by the end of that race. Let's run 1 through 10 so we can at least get that out of the way, and then we can
chit
about this more. So we had on the box was Checa Lanzi, as you mentioned, kind of an oddball, and man, he was pushing. Nori Haga, who...
Oh, and actually, you know what? It was Lanzi and Sykes that were doing all the beautiful drifting
together,
in tandem. In tandem, like, it was really in tandem. It was beautiful.
Well, and you know, it's funny because Imola has always been a Ducati track, if you think. And so certainly, that came to the fore, you know, last year it was Haga and Fabrizio that won. This year we had Checa, who seems to be the emergent star in his ripe old age, and is already confirmed for next year on the Altea team.
He actually signed for 2 years.
Yeah. And which is incredible. You know, the age is moving up. It kind of makes me feel good about myself.
But you should get back into it.
Yeah, all over it. It's kind of expensive. One thing or the other. So on the box, Checa, Lanzi, Haga. Well done, Nori. Nori is certainly coming alight at the end of the season.
In a way, this is the Haga of old. You know, sucks in the beginning of the season and then just really cranks it up. Now, the only difference this year is that he really sucked for the first half. He didn't suck. He just didn't have the heart in it or something. But yeah, he's, you know, at this track, coming from 15th on the grid. And not having the best of start in race one, actually, he was fantastic. He could have caught Lanzi if they had maybe one more lap to go.
Yeah, no doubt. And it will be interesting him actually running on the Aprilia next year. And we were kind of wondering, you know, what was going to be going on with Nori. But great for him to get on the box. Jakob Smerts, excellent qualifier. Not so good this week, but he certainly ran a good race in fourth place. Leon Haslam in fifth, and he certainly was fighting Tom Sykes, as you mentioned, in the sixth.
Smerts started second and on the grid.
That's right. He was second on the grid.
Yeah. No, he's always good on for one lap.
But although it is impressive, you have to – the guy can qualify well in the wet and the dry. So
True.
Moving on down, Sykes, as we mentioned, in six, Michel Fabrizio, hard charging, not sure where he's going to be next year. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. It's actually, I think the rug kind of got pulled out from under him.
Well, we'll talk about some rugs in a bit, won't we?
Yeah.
Shane Byrne, who will be departing from the Altea team and not sure where he's headed as well, in eighth, Sylvain Guintoli in ninth, and Cal Crutchlow in 10th, followed right up by Max Biaggi.
Right. And, Crutchlow actually was also, up front for a while, but he made a mistake and...
Imola is costly when you make errors, because those corners are absolutely flowing in the tiniest little... Especially if you have an issue on some of the slow corners, you're going to pay for that big time.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, no doubt.
He did. He went off quite a bit into the gravel and had to make all the way back. And yep.
Yeah.
And actually, Haslam. You know, let's mention the fact that Haslam was up front and fighting with Checa for first, as he had to because he really needed the points. And on the last lap, he made a mistake and. Went into the gravel and came back onto the track in third, but still had so much crap all over his tires that he could not ride at full speed, and he got passed by both Haga and Smertz.
Yeah, and the other thing that was kind of interesting about this weekend was going into it, we kind of had an expectation of it to be wet, or at least that's what the weather reports were announcing, and we would not be that surprised for Formula to be a bit of a damp track, but the only time we really had any wet was during the end of, I think it was FP2, and during qualifying. So those mixed weekends can really end up putting a fair amount of weirdness together when it comes to setup. And so there were a lot of teams that were doing a lot of searching in race one. And indeed, you know, very well, Biaggi could have been one of those jewels.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I mean, the weather on Sunday was fantastic. It was could have been better, but you're right. That's probably when the teams really figured out their stuff, because race two was a little more predictable.
It was. Yeah, definitely was. So those were our results. We had a few guys down at the bottom that were, you know, Troy Courser, I believe he had actually had an off-course excursion. Chaus finished in front of him in 12th. The two people out of the race were James Toseland and...
He had a mechanical.
Had a mechanical, and Roger Hayden. And, but it was, you know, great seeing at least one green bike up there at the front. You know me.
Yeah.
I'm always up for that. So... That was pretty cool. In the meantime, and do we want to split it, or should we just go ahead and do race two?
Let's do race two, and because there's a lot more to talk about, I think. Race two.
Yeah. let me run through your top 10 here, and then we'll go back and we'll break it down. Same race winner, well done. Very, very wisely run race, and although he certainly had to take his time to get around the... even better running and certainly more pleasantly set up Tom Sykes, who led that thing for Lord knows how long.
At least half the race.
At least half the race, and certainly was a roadblock even then when a few people got around him. Anyway, Cheka, Nori Haga in second, Cal Crutchlow in third. That is your podium. Tom Sykes in fourth. Max Biaggi managed to have a much better race, come up in fifth. Shaky Byrne in sixth, Lorenzo Lanzi in seventh, Sylvain Guintoli in eighth, Ruben Chaus in ninth, and Lucas Scassa in tenth. Well, who's missing from there? And those of you that listen to the show certainly by now already know the news. With not too many laps left to go, Leon Haslam, who was running a great race, his motor went pop. And with that, his season hopes for a potential championship in the World Superbike rounds also went pop. And it was a big bang and a big smoky bang.
Man,
and
I think it was Troy Courser who was right behind him. And to avoid the possibility, because, you know, when you're stuck in the smoke, you don't know whether there's an oil on the track. Mm-hmm. I think it was Troy that was behind him. And he actually just opted to go off the track completely. It was like, okay, I don't want to be on the track if there's anything getting laid down, so I'm going off. And he was way off to the left.
Yeah, I think Fabrizio actually did the same thing, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, he laid down a Maxwell Smartish. there's an obscure reference. Some of you might get that. But, yeah, those were your top 10. And, frankly, it was a bit heartbreaking for Leon. Granted, it was a bit of a reach, and he had a lot of points to make up. But... you always want to have the opportunity to at least try and win or lose on your talent instead of a mechanical. And so that, you know, did they tune the thing to the gills? Was it an issue with the possibly ailing Alstera team? Who knows? But the point at this is that there's too many points. And basically we awarded the world championship to one Roman Emperor.
Yeah. Yep, 13 years since the last one.
Amazing. That's cool in a way.
That is so cool. That is so cool.
And it had all of the track invasion pomp and circumstances that you can even imagine. It was, they flooded that circuit.
You know, it's like my son is very familiar with Max Biaggi because he started watching GPs with me when Biaggi was still in MotoGP. Mm-hmm. And so he knows the name, and he knows the history, and he knows that Biaggi went to Superbikes, and I think he even watched the first Superbike race that Biaggi won you know, when he first came back. And I was telling him, yeah, you know, the last time he won, you weren't even born, dude. <It's>, you know, the championship is amazing. It's just amazing.
You know, if both you and Martin are ever absent, if it'd be cool, I could actually use him as a co-host.
There you go.
So yeah, we had a few other folks down there in the hinterlands, if you will, and nobody real surprising. Courser again was pretty far down there, but we did have a fair amount of bikes out, including, of course, Haslam. The first bike out was James Toseland, and talk about a miserable weekend for him, huh?
That was a crash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with his teammate, you know, finishing on the podium, yeah. And the fact that that Toseland had a fantastic pace both races.
Yeah, he did. In fact, he was.
It sounded like he was, you know, he was going to be, you know, fighting for the podium or even better.
Yeah, well, you got to finish the race, don't you?
You do.
One way or another. We have word, and I think this is 90% confirmed at this point, that he'll be pairing up with Ayrton Badovini on a satellite BMW team, was it?
I think so.
I believe so. So we'll have to see how that goes. The other riders out in that race were Fabrizio, Smertz, and Hayden. So double bad weekend for Roger Hayden, and hopefully things will come together for him at some point. And that was a cool race, but it was kind of anticlimactic, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, I mean, you know, when Biaggi kind of hooked up to Haslam, because Haslam was ahead of Biaggi, mm-hmm. All he really had to do at that point was
cruise for points.
Just be within, you know, a spot or two of Leon.
Sure.
And as long as Leon didn't go and win the race, right? And so it was going to be, I think it was going to be anticlimactic anyway. In a way, Leon Haslam's season, I think, finished kind of aptly, because I think the factory failed him. Suzuki really failed him. And so the bike failing like that was very kind of like a
coup de grace.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it just summed up like let's not forget that he's riding injured.
Mm-hmm.
I think they said that he had some like ridiculous amount, like 12 injections in his knee to,
nothing.
and his thumb, right?
Yeah, it's been a long, hard season and a season of kind of wondering. And the word is now, you know, wondering what the team will do. And he had a 2-year contract, and that was supposed to run through 2011. And as we know now, we'll go into a little bit deeper. He was released from that contract by Alstera and is signed with a new team. So at least, you know,
I wonder how much the engine blowing up had to do with that. Like, do they feel extra bad? You know,
I don't know, but word is that it was a done deal.
No, I'm kidding. Of course, they're not going to be.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, if there's anybody that probably feels better, it's probably Francis Botta, because certainly he went into the season looking to provide a excellent resource and atmosphere for Leon to kind of bloom. And at the beginning of the season, we did have, you know, some hope that team was going to have the funding and backup and support that it needed to provide Leon with that ride that he needed. And, you know, you guys know that we've talked to him a few times this year, and certainly we'll want to talk with him shortly again. But, you know, then I have to hearken back to last year with the Alstera Suzuki team when they lost their primary sponsor near the end of the season. It just kind of poof, went away. And so there's certainly issues there.
But there's issues with Suzuki across the board. I mean, if they're having troubles with Rizla, you know, in MotoGP, so it's a shame because, you know, Leon, obviously incredibly talented rider, very hungry, and I don't know, this BMW thing just kind of sounds a little scary to me too. Like, he just can't buy a break. Because you know, we'll talk about this in a sec, what's going on with the whole BMW, you know, mess.
True, but we don't know all the information.
No, no, we don't know that much. But before we go off into WSS or whatever, I did want to mention that the Biaggi Pirate Celebration
Oh yeah.
Was really weird. I mean, it was so obviously like not, it was not, I mean, it was staged to be fun, but it looked so staged. You know, I just don't know how else to put it. It just looked like, you know, oh, well, I think that, you know, like,
I don't think they had the right camera angle. I bet it looked really cool and funny from a different angle.
Yeah. But. Well, no, I saw some photos. I mean, it was mostly for the photos. Right. And so I've seen the photos and it's just still like, I don't know. It was weird.
Well, you know, he's no valet.
Well, he's no nut.
Yeah. He doesn't have, you know, the entire town of Tivoli behind him. You know, it was still in good fun. And
no, and I also want to say there's been a lot of detractors to Biagi this season because he's on the Aprilia, and the Aprilia's, yeah, it's probably the best bike out there. But, you know, you got to look at the other riders who rode the same bike and finished nowhere near where Max did. I think Max did a fantastic job. And the one guy that really was singing his praises was Neil Hodgson on the Eurosport feed. He was just, you know, saying like, you know, when you're teaching like a kid how to ride on road racing, you say go watch some Max Biaggi. It's a different kind of riding that, you know, we like to watch a lot of the backing in kind of stuff, which is definitely not Max Biaggi. I don't think I've ever seen him really lose the back end like that. But anyway, my point is that guy deserved the championship. I'm so happy for him. I think it's so cool that with all the crap that he had to deal with, like when he left MotoGP, and then, you know, his return in World Superbikes, and then you know, he had some rough times on that still Regatta Ducati in 2008. Man, that was some scary crashes that he had, and just troubles with that bike. And then the Aprilia comes along, and you know, it's his old team. I mean, it's really kind of a fairy tale. It's cool.
Yeah, well, on top of that, he's come of age for those of us that have followed Max for a long time. And I will admit to kind of back in the day, I was like, you know, the guy's so freaking cranky, and it's like, you know, smile up once every so often. And frankly, Max has really chilled out. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, lose your edge or whatever, but I think that he's actually become a very great spokesperson, frankly, for World Superbike, great for Aprilia, and great for the Italian fans. And actually, I think his fan base has moved way beyond those people and actually won a ton of people back. He certainly won me back. And, you know, I love the way he is now. And, you know, I can actually compound his old, you know, little bit nutso spirit onto the way he is now and go, yeah, that's cool. Dude is totally matured. He's, you know, he's...
It took him 40 years, but yeah.
Well, yeah, or whatever that particular number is. But what we're looking at this point is Max obviously has secured the championship. 413 points going into the final round that we have coming up at Magny-Cours, and which is this weekend. And so Leon has them with 350. There certainly simply aren't enough points left in the model. There's only 50 up for grabs, and he is a total of 63 behind. So he's really not under threat from Johnny Rea, who is in the third spot with 288. Carlos Checa popped up over Cal Crutchlow with those two wins. And so we've got to, you know, run down through the rest. But
well, the big thing is that Johnny Rea is not going to be at Magny-Cours.
He'll be there.
I think it's like 95% certain he's not riding.
Well, there's always 5% left.
Yes. But what it means is that Carlos Checa, who is, what, 14 points behind Johnny Rea, was very likely to take third in the championship. Which he really deserves, because if you think about it, that those two mechanicals and Miller,
mm-hmm.
they would have put. I mean, that's 50 points right there. He would have been fighting for second with Leon Haslam.
Mm. And if you look back, at the other Ducatis that actually went out at Miller, Lucas Gossett at the same time, and he ended up like swapping over to Aprilia. You know, and it's a testament to that team and the LT boys that they actually stuck with Ducati at that point, because it was kind of looking like Ducati was on the wane. You know, we hadn't seen a whole lot of really good stuff out of the factory team.
Yeah, no, they were so struggling back then.
Yeah, and everybody was kind of wondering. We all know, obviously, that Ducati has pulled out of a full factory team for 2011. But this resurgence of Checa, and you kind of have to wonder, Jules, are they getting extra support at the end of the year? Are they getting bits and parts that may have been intended for the factory team, or at least spreading the love around, if you will? But again, you know, Checa is another guy that has, you know, late season resurgences. So good on him. And, you know, the guy can still ride. You know, there's not a whole lot of people calling him, you know, careless Checker these days, isn't it?
Right. It's been ages since he's been, well, actually, I guess 2 years ago, Valencia, that moved, anyway.
When hunted match. If you have to go back that far, that's not bad. That's pretty cool.
No, I know.
So yeah, a great weekend in World Supersport. Bummed for Leon, but that's how the racing goes, and he certainly secured himself a second spot and has his things sort of wound up for 2011. Do we want to talk about news yet, or should we just run through World Supersport?
We got to talk about Supersports.
Okay, well, so
I really want to hear your take on this race.
You know, my take is pretty generic in general, and frankly, it's based on, well, okay, so we knew going into this weekend, and it's been this way for a while, that especially since Johan Lescaures went out with his injury, that there were two guys running for the championship, and it was two guys that we are not surprised at. It's, you know, we knew basically this year was going to be three guys. It was going to be Lescaures, Safu Oglu, and Laverty. With the scores going out, it really nailed down, and especially points-wise, and there was nobody else that was going to be able to take it. It was a battle between Laverty and Safu Oglu, and Eugene was trailing. And so coming into this race weekend...
And one thing that always kind of confuses me a little bit when I'm looking at these points is that, you know, during World Superbike weekend, I'm thinking, oh yeah, you know, there's 50 points on the table. Well, there isn't in Supersport because they only race once.
You basically just said what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
And so, yeah, you only got one chance during the weekend. And, you know, it's do or die in a way.
Yeah, so we obviously have, I think they came in 11 points apart, which means, you know, Eugene had to win and hope for at least four riders in between. Let's see.
Well, only one for this weekend because we still had another weekend coming.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, to be able to catch up. Yes, that's true. I mean, if you really think about it, he all he had to do is not be 25 points behind it in the last round.
Exactly.
To have a mathematical chance, but to have a realistic chance, you know, he wants to be within, you know, 5-6 points, something like that. So he wanted to have, you know, one or two riders between him and Safu Oglu. And but Safu Oglu was not going to have any of it. And, you know, they both got a great start, and they diced pretty much from the beginning.
Yeah, there were four passes for the lead in the first lap.
Yeah. And I think that happened again, like, on lap 8 or 9, or I mean, it was just crazy. They certainly were passing at least once a lap each other,
and they had such a lead that basically there was no threat from behind. The secondary group was led for most of the way by Pirro.
Yep.
In a battle with Chaz Davis, and but that those guys were getting falling back further and further, and the pace that Keenan and Eugene were setting at the front was highly variable, if you will, because they really were toying with each other as the time went on. In fact, the first time that Keenan essentially waved Eugene past, I think everybody was like, ah, it's going to be one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were pulling away from the rest of the field. So I think that even those moments they were still at a, you know, pretty good pace.
Oh, and we had probably the most monumental leg dangle out of Keenan.
Yeah,
I don't think
like a wave.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could have watched that and go, "Ah, that looks normal." he essentially set a new precedent for it. And the thing that was amazing when he was doing that, and if you haven't seen this race, just get it and watch it. Was you know, he can kick it out about, you know, 3 or 4 feet out in the air. Meanwhile, the bike is just squirming like crazy underneath him going into this right-hander. And it was just bizarre. And in fact, you know, Hodgson actually mentioned it. And, you know, we've had discussions in the past about if, you know, sticking the leg out is actually a strategy, if you will, for, you know, actually keeping somebody behind you. But if you're behind somebody else, it just looks weird. Especially when you've got somebody as neat and tidy on a bike as Eugene Laverty, who you don't see him waving his leg around at all, but he's still quick through the corners. But they went back and forth all through that race. And in fact, I'll be the first to say it publicly, but Eugene, he didn't brake check him, but he throttle checked him in the chicane. And you saw it happening. You saw it coming and you saw it happen. And I chuckled about it and they immediately started commenting on it. But the, you know, those two, while they were probably grinning like crazy under their helmets, were probably also doing that with clenched teeth, because this was certainly an epic battle and you knew it was going to come down in the end.
And, you know, and the championship is at stake.
Mm-hmm. It was, or at least a measure of the championship.
Right.
And we still have it going. So what happened? There really isn't a whole lot to talk about with the rest of the race, with the exception of the last lap, because the focus from TV, frankly, the whole race, and I like this, was they stuck with the front two guys. That was what was going on. And it was cool because it was probably one of the best races of the year. Back and forth, tight. Going the last lap, Keenan, three laps from the end, Keenan basically put his head down, stopped dicking around, and said, okay, it's time to really put the hammer down. And he tried to break away, couldn't do it. Eugene stuck on his tail. Coming in the last lap, Eugene had a couple of places where he thought he might have an opportunity, but he was never close enough. And it all came down to the final chicane,
which is very slow. I think you entered that thing in 30 or 40 miles an hour.
Or 45 in this particular case. Nice. And you knew it was coming. There was no doubt that it was going to happen. And nobody, I believe, including Keenan, was surprised by this. Eugene basically made a last-ditch effort to come up the inside and turn first into the chicane. And
with a line that would have basically taken him across the second apex.
It would have taken him across the second apex, but if you were think about it, Jules, every other time they came through there, they were running over the curbs. And this time, both of them were going outside the curb. And I think that was probably because Eugene ended up standing up Keenan just a little bit, but he didn't have time to finish his braking. And the bottom line is that Eugene, you could see him going into that in the replays, that the front was skittering, and it was clear that he was like struggling for traction. And the inevitable happened, which was he went down right as he barely touched the paint. And you're talking about the maximum level of adhesion, and he exceeded that 100%. This is exactly what happened, and washed the front out, took out both himself and Keenan. They skittered across through the gravel trap at the second part of the chicane. Both ended up over near the wall. Keenan was still moving when he tried to get up. Kind of did a backwards stumble. And then they both immediately jumped up and hopped in their bikes. Meanwhile, they had the 6 or 7 second lead. Coming up behind them, we were expecting was, because we saw it before, was Chaz Davis and Pirro with the rest of the guys in tow. And so these guys are still struggling to get across the line first. It still matters, especially, you know, they were 1 and 2 at that point when right. They were lying down on the track.
And it was such a gentle crash, really, if you think about it, that they both knew they could remount.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a factor of the speed, right? The speed that chicane is actually built very, very flat. You saw guys go across that thing all weekend. And they both got up, both unhurt. And basically Keenan got his bike started first and made it across the line, but not before Michel Pirro passed them both and came across the line first. Well, confusion reigned. Eugene, it took another about a second or so for Eugene to get his bike started. He came across in third. So your guys in the box were Pirro, Safuoglu, and Laverty. But what everybody was waiting for was Chaz Davis, because he would have had the opportunity, in theory, to have won that race. Well, that didn't happen, because somewhere in that final lap, a fuel sensor decided to go on vacation, and the bike thought itself started fuel and shut off.
Oh, is that what happened?
That is what happened.
Oh, my God.
And I believe the term pissed off would be a mild description of how he felt at that point. Certainly not towards the team. It was just one of those things. But, you know, Imola was the first race that he ran real solid and ran for the BE1 team last year. And he had a great run. He had a great run in Imola. It was a track he'd never seen before. And so that's, you know, that's heartbreaking for him. He is already signed for next year, signed for BE1 coming back. And I think that's a measure of how he respects the team and the possibilities for that bike. And he said, you know, he said he wants to come back and win it. So good on him. Good on him. But let's run through the rest of the grid, because even though that show was basically up towards the front, there were still other people involved, although it's hard to remember them all. So your grid, Piero Safuoglu, Laverty, not the grid, of course, but the final finishing, Brock Parks, once again on the Kawasaki bike in place of Johan Scores, got a fourth, and he managed to get, good for him. He's still real hot, and it's good to see him around. Fujiwara's teammate, on the Kawasaki as well, in fifth place, Massimo Rockley, Mark Aitchison, and that's a great run for Aitchison, if you think about it, Miguel Durati, another local, Tamburini, and Vizziello in 10th place. Pretty cool. We had a lot of people out. Of course, Davis was the last. Imre Toth, Robin Arms, Gino Rea, and that was a bummer. And he said that was his first crash that he caused himself so far in World Supersport. he watched the front. David Salom, Fabian Foray, Miguel Praia, and it was Robert Quarmby. They went down on lap one, turn one. And that was a real drag because Praia was having a good run. So our championship points at this point. Eugene ain't out of it. There is still time. There is still room, but not a lot. He needs to win the race, and he needs Keenan to, I believe, get 7th or worse, and that would actually secure it for him. That would tie it for them, I believe. And Eugene would win on the number of, or would win the championship on the number of overall wins that he has at 7 or 8. And I believe Keenan's only got 3. Pretty much, Keenan's been super consistent this year. And Eugene had a mechanical and a DNF at Portimao. So that's where it stands. But he says that, you know, it was his thing to win. Now, Johan Scores is still in 3rd place. It's a testament to how well he had run this year. Chaz Davis in 4th with 137, and he cannot make it up, even if he wins. So he's going to end up in 4th place, and the rest of the folks on down. It looks like next year we may have a bit of a revitalized World Supersport grid with some people coming over from Moto2 with a reduction of grid sizes. So, and some additional people coming up. You got to remember, Jules, that this year was kind of a Moto2 testing ground. I know I'm mixing metaphors right now, but I have a feeling World Supersport's going to be a little bit more busy next year, especially with the reduction for one bike per rider on the teams, and maybe the opportunity for teams not to have to spend as much money to be competitive.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't become, you know, a pile up in the first corner like Moto2 this year. So
no, well, you know, we've only had these, we've had like 20 something bike grids.
Right. No. I did that. That's what I mean. Like, I would love to see, you know, 8 more bikes on the grid.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, a bit of a bummer too for Eugene in that, but in the end, Keenan lost 5 points and Eugene only lost 4. So he actually got a little closer, but certainly. Way he intended to do it. And while Crash.net really tried to stir up the fire by reinterpreting the comments that were made by Keenan Safuoglu, I think the bottom line is that Keenan understood what happened. You know, he knew it was coming. He knew it was make or break. And frankly, Keenan probably would have done the exact same thing being in that position, maybe in a little bit more aggressive. I think, you know, Eugene did everything he could to try and make it a clean pass. I've heard some people make some really silly comments about the thing. You know, Eugene was unprofessionally. No. That is not his way. So I give a big whatever to some of those people who are being cranky about it. And the bottom line is that Keenan still is in a great position to take the world championship this year. So a good race. Very exciting. And if you want to watch a great battle between two guys kind of echoing back in a way to two guys that respect each other and rode that the vast majority of that race in a very, very, very clean fashion, harking back to, you know, the Schwantz rainy years, if you want to, with some insane riding, or even, you know, Imola in 2002 with Edwards and Bayless. This was one of those races that you have to watch. I'm certainly going to be watching it again as the years go by.
Oh yeah, definitely. This is probably my favorite World Supersport race now. It used to be the 2008 Assen.
Yeah, that Assen race was great.
Yeah, it was. It was. This one was a lot more meaningful though. When you see, yeah. You know, sometimes like, I mean, I love the when you have a big battle when there's six or seven guys that are all in the fight for first for. Like, you know, we get 125 sometimes, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think it's much more satisfying to see a race like this where there's two guys. I mean, these guys are both going for the championship. Mm-hmm. They're both going for the race win. And they're way, way ahead of everybody else. And they're dicing the entire time. It's real. It's tactics. It's skill. It's not just craziness, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there was no doubt that there was a fair amount of... That was a thinking race.
Exactly.
Those guys were basically, it was a chess match.
Yeah.
You know, yep. A very high speed one. and the pawns were all gone. But yeah, and we also had the opportunity because of that for TV to focus on them. So there wasn't a whole lot of cutting. You know, you got pretty much every corner and... It doesn't do the sponsors that much good back in the rest of the pack, but for a fan, it was awesome to watch. You know, if I didn't have to go to bed pretty soon, I'd probably stay up and watch that one again.
Yeah, you got to work tomorrow, dude.
I do. All right, so that was your World Supersport Gush-a-thon.
Ooh, that was a crazy, amazing race to watch.
It was. And I'd love to hear your guys' comments out there in MotoGP OD land, what you thought of it. I think everybody's been kind of just holding their collective breath or just kind of amazed at it. But if you got any ideas or thoughts, send us an email in the contact form. Well, we got some news. We should probably get cooking because, as usual, you and I have...
chatted and chatted and chatted.
Yes, we have.
Let's do World Superbikes first. You know, we have...
Yeah.
This, you know, Leon Haslam is signed with BMW, and then this weird story comes out of BMW that Davide Tardazzi has been fired.
Craziness.
Yeah. And, you know, and the non-German team members are being let go or not being paid or something.
Well, let me pull you back because something popped in my head when I was reading this story, and... There is a bit of, right now, because we don't know all the information, a bit of sensationalism going on. And these wholesale migrations or modifications at teams are nothing unusual, if you think about it, especially when riders transition in and out, right? And as an example, and it was an extreme one, although you can still actually kind of see some parallels in a way, was when the Dantin team reorganized and everybody got booted out of there. And they brought in basically an all-Italian crew.
Yeah.
And so this one kind of looks like, and granted, there's no doubt that Tardazzi's dismissal, if that is the case, is a big deal and odd.
Well, that's the part that I find strange, is that, you know, I BMW had a much better season this year than last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's... We obviously have no idea what goes on inside the team in terms of internal, you know, dynamics. But it's a bummer because it's a bummer in some cases. Although I think, you know, some people are saying, well, look, you know, Tardazzi is going to end up probably, you know, at Yamaha or somewhere. You know,
well, that wouldn't be odd because Marigali is heading over to work with the Fiat team, but. It would be a real bummer if it's true. And we're so kind of fact-free right now because the information that we've heard has only come out of one single publication and been reprinted elsewhere. So kind of hard to know if it's 100%. I'm sure there is some substance behind the the idea that this may occur, but we really don't know full on yet.
Well, the reason why I wanted to mention it mainly is because I just want to see Leon Haslam on a good, well sponsored, well supported team next year, because I really think that guy has so much talent and that has not been utilized correctly yet.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
And so it's just painful for me to see that there's, a chance of there being some kind of flip flop over there. But then again, Tardazzi wasn't there last year, and they didn't suck completely. So,
well, no, it was a massively, building team up to that point.
Yeah.
And that year has to be considered as a massive credit to what was accomplished this year with Biaggi. I mean, that's kind of, at least in my mind, kind of straight up. But we'll have to see. I mean, there's certainly, by the time the show comes out, we're going to have a lot more information.
Right.
A lot more information.
We're recording this one on Wednesday night, and the news really just basically kind of popped up for us in the afternoon here.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. Chaka, of course, thought it was a perfect weekend. Can't imagine that with that. We know that he signed, once again, a renewal with Altea for 2012, right? 2 year?
I believe that they said it was 2 years, which I found amazing because, of his advanced years.
I don't think he's ready for, Social Security or the Dole yet. we do know that, as you mentioned earlier, that Jonathan Rea is a maybe, but probably not for MagniCore. We will have to see. I looked at the weather for MagniCore. It looks relatively normal. And there's no doubt that there are still a few pins left to fall. If you walk yourself through the finishing order for this weekend, there are a fair amount of people that we're not really sure where they're going to land yet. We thought that the announced departure of Ducati out of World Superbike, or at least factory-wise, was going to open the floodgates of the final silly season falling into place. And it looks like we're going to be heading into the last weekend, which is really weird, Jules. Usually everything's all kind of wound up by now.
I know. The silly season is going to be going on for, a few more months, it sounds like.
And the cool thing is, once this weekend concludes, we're going to have testing on, I think Monday is going to be journo stuff and probably some celebrity-ish people. And then Tuesday is full-on testing for those people that have been released from their current ride. So I'm looking forward to that, which means, by next week, Jules, next Tuesday, we're going to know what the deal is with Leon. Does he fit with the bike? So
cool.
Once again, we'll have a whole bunch more data. Anything else going on in World Superbike land? MagniCore is always a fun way to end the season, although I really liked having Portimao end the season before. Maybe they can have two races there, one to open and one to close.
It is a fantastic track. I do love that track. But so yeah. MagniCore is a great track too.
Yeah, no doubt. So tip the hat to World Superbike, provided a great weekend of racing, and certainly going to rewatch World Supersport and put that on the list of ones to rip through.
I'm gonna, by the way, go out on a limb and say that Haga's going to take a two-race win.
All right. Well, how many of our fans are you betting that with? how tiny is that limb at this point?
We'll see.
Okay, if I had to guess, MagniCore from last year.
Leave it at that. I just think he's going to basically finish on a high note.
Well, no doubt. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he fares next year on the Aprilia, aren't you?
Oh, totally. I'm so glad that's finalized now, right?
It is finalized.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
So, yeah, it will be cool. Interesting pairing on that team, won't it be?
Oh, my God.
But probably a good one because, frankly, as we said, Max is chilled. All right, so what do we have to talk about next? We have coming up this coming weekend, obviously, is Motegi. So we've got a great, busy, busy race weekend. Motegi is, as folks might remember, and if you're not, I will refresh your memory, was originally scheduled for April, and that crazy volcano that Martin is the only person I know on the planet that can pronounce it in a strange accent. basically punted this race to the end of the season. And I'm glad they got it in, because even though Motegi is kind of an oddball circuit, certainly the pomp and circumstance that goes on in the only home round for the Japanese manufacturers is always really cool. They bring out a lot of really neat stuff. But you know how they always do the stuff with the Honda Museum. Last year we had, we had some of the GP bikes out there running. And I think that's very cool. The thing that I don't like about Motegi is kind of the blandness of the circuit, although it has a couple of very picturesque points. But it seems like it's one of those circuits that, you know, one thing that Motegi will be fun on is because it is kind of, it's a little F1-y, if you will, F1-ish.
Oh, yeah. It's all, you know, speed up, slow down, speed up, slow down.
But in a way, I think that kind of suits, from a visual standpoint, the Moto2 bikes. I think they actually look really cool on Tilka-type circuits. Well, because the massive requirement in those types of circuits is, what are you going to do? You're going to carry corner speed and massive corner speed. And it's pretty clear that the Moto2 bikes have been maturing quite well. And so I'm looking forward to seeing them there. The one feature that always sticks out every year is bikes coming through the tunnel, right?
Yeah, both tunnels, yeah.
And, but, you know, there's, Motegi has had some epic stuff going back over the days. You know, the one thing that probably sticks to my mind is one person has always done, not always, but done really well there, is also somebody that has a fair amount of controversy there. One being number 64.5, Loris Capirossi. And of course, why is this controversy from there? Well,
you have to go back a long time.
You do. But those of us with a two-stroke oil running through our veins certainly do remember in that particular debacle. You know, I'll leave it at that.
98.
Yeah, right? Back in the Biaggi days.
Yeah. Post-Biaggi, actually. Biaggi had moved on to GP that year.
True. And those fans out there, you know, those of you that remember that, we won't even go into specific stroll. Write in and tell us what you remember about that and your thoughts on it.
Cool.
Yeah, and so GP will be fun. This is going to be the second to last round of 800s in the MSMA country. And frankly, it's also the sort of adios and waving bye-bye to the MSMA's involvement only once more next year, as their contract expires at the end of 2011. You know, that's going to be a big deal, Jules, if you think about it, with the changing of the rules to the CRT teams and the thousands and the 800s still lingering about. 2012 is going to be, talk about looking forward, huh? But 2011 is going to be a transition year.
It's funny because we definitely, I remember the when 800s were announced, right from the very beginning, everybody was like, WTF, you know? Nobody liked the idea. Everybody likes the idea of what's going to happen in 2012. And I hope that we're right.
Yeah. Well, you and I pretty quickly warmed to Moto 2, and you and I were both like, uh-huh, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
We came around on that, and it wasn't because of, you know, the quote unquote close racing. Certainly not because of the crashes that were occurring, but it seemed like there was the opportunity for a lot of teams to actually run up front. And while you and I are certainly more probably of the purist types that don't want to see things being watered down, I don't think either of us have actually griped about some of the racing that's occurred this year in that class.
No. I mean, I think that it's a little bit. I think that the series is not as exciting as some people make it out to be, because there's been a lot of runaway races, just like in MotoGP. But there's always something to watch in a Moto2 race.
Yep, and let's just very briefly run through the 2009 results for Motegi, because it always does produce something that's kind of interesting. Sure. 2009 GP was Lorenzo, Rossi, and Pedrosa. So, you know, a trio of aliens, which that term is kind of going flat these days. 250 GP, and guys in both, all over the classes, with the exception of one, Bautista, Ayama, and Pacini. I'm not even sure what he's doing these days. I think he's a test rider. In your 125, and certainly people are going to figure four this coming weekend, were Iannone, Simone, and Paulo Espargaró.
Wait, Pacini? You're asking of Pacini being a test rider?
Oh, I think he's been bouncing around, has he not?
Well, he was in their last race.
Well, that's
in
true.
But he crashed in turn one.
Yeah, he's been in and out.
Oh, no. He crashed later in the race. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, he's had a tough season. He had a tough season last year, even though he had some great results. So
yeah.
Other stuff about GP land, Scott Redding did sign a 2-year extension for Mark VDS, and that's a really cool team. It's a really cool team because it's got a bunch of money, and they certainly have a great crew and staff. I mean, Pete Benson, you know, for a new series effort is not a bad crew chief to have, and so good for Scott.
For those who don't remember, he used to be Nikki Hayden's crew chief.
For a long, long time.
Long time.
Yep. And thank you for that, Jules. there is word that...
I'm just sticking to the bullet point one or two, I think.
we do know next year that, and has been stated by probably departing Lynn Jarvis, that data sharing is going to be coming back to the Fiat garage. You can only expect it. There was a bit of a bit from Motorsprint today, because we know that Valentino Rossi is contemplating perhaps only running a few of these rounds and actually sitting out the last two. And the speculation was, and I think it's probably as good as anything else, that Ben would actually get bumped up to the Fiat squad, which is allowable under the rookie rules, because a replacement rider can be a rookie. And Cal Crutchlow would get the nod to come and jump on a little bit early on the seat pairing with Colin. And
wow. That would be so cool.
It would be cool. And it would be good kind of all the way around if you think about it.
You know, by the way, I was listening to you and Martin from last week. And when you guys were talking about, you know, Rossi missing those last two rounds, something occurred to me is, you know, it really makes sense for Rossi to sit those two rounds out, mainly because he knows for a fact that Lorenzo is better at those tracks. First of all, he hates Valencia. He's never done well in Valencia since 2004. I don't think he's even he's been on the podium. Sorry, he's been on the podium. But you know what's Estoril? Estoril is the first track that Lorenzo beat him at when he was in his rookie year, and you know since then he's always beaten Rossi there. So yeah, let's just sit him out. it sounds like a good smart plan, you know.
Well, and you know, there's still kind of the up in the air question, and frankly, I think hopefully that'll be resolved soon. Is if the folks at Yamaha will let him test the deck, and I think, to be honest, I think it's good for everybody, or at least some continuity. I don't want to see this pissing match, and it's really not Yamaha's way. It's not. So I hope that happens, but if that is the case, and with this, you know, seriously reduced testing schedule, you got to get him on the bike. And, you know, will he heal up enough with those two race weekends gone by? It's kind of interesting. You know, we kind of gloat a little bit, at least us World Superbike fans. You know, the beginning of the year, we've got all this racing going on. People that are, you know, massive GP fans have to wait. Well, what do we have going on? The last race of the year this weekend, we're going to have racing basically through the end of October.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that the other day. I was like, yeah, you know, it kind of works out nice. You get to, you know, watch one series, you're waiting for the other, and then the first series ends, and then you get to watch the other.
Yeah, well, things are going to change a little bit next year. We know the Qatar schedule is kind of swapped about a bit, so they might get a little bit more in line. But, you know, the one thing you kind of get with World Superbike is you get a pair of races every weekend. you get the do-over, but no doubt that will be cool. What else we got? We know that Skyler's going to have her bit. Do we want to go ahead and run through that?
Let's just play that right now, and then we'll wrap up.
Hello, MotoGP OD land. This is Skyler Vickroy with your AMA Pro Road Racing Report. Ah, the season has finally come down to an end. The last round at Barber Motorsports Park took place this past weekend, in which both championships in the American Superbike and Daytona Sport Bike were going to have to be won in one of the last two races of the season. Let's start with Daytona Sport Bike. The weekend started real early. During practice, Herron and Eslick, which are two of the title contenders, got into a little bar banging, and Eslick actually had a crash. So they were not exactly on good terms going into the weekend, and that would play out later on in the races. In race one, you know, the top three were separated by 12 points going in, and it was definitely going to be a bar-banging affair. Eslick was a man on a mission. He wasn't going to let Herron finish in front of him because he figured that was the most threat, but actually while him and Herron were banging bars, here comes old Martin Cardenas flying by them, and actually taking it all the way to the flag for the win. Now, race two, a little different story. Rain came into play, but you still had Eslick willing to battle Heron tooth and nail to the point where I believe Eslick actually ran Heron off the track a couple times and then went ahead and just plowed him off in the braking zone and took him out. During which all of this, it was, you know, a lot of controversy getting passed up, but more importantly, Martin Cardenas got in front and ran away with it for the second race win of the weekend and taking the overall championship ahead of Danny Eslick and Josh Heron. So, Martin Cardenas, congratulations on that. It was a great season. The season, there wasn't a single race where guys were separated by more than three bike lengths at times. The Daytona Sport Bike class this year was absolutely amazing. Some of the most competitive and best racing I've seen in America or in the world alone in quite some time. I can't remember the last time I've seen so much shoulder banging, except for maybe that World Supersport stuff. That's pretty good, too. But moving on. In the American Superbike, Josh Hayes and Tommy Hayden actually were going to come down to this weekend as the battle for the championship. And during the first race, Hayes and Hayden had a heck of a battle. They duked it out the entire race. Coming down to the last lap, Hayes threw it into the last corner, made a pass, but Tommy squared him up, and it was a drag race down the straight, which Hayden won, and it was an absolute epic battle for that race. And in race two, just like in the sport bike race, rain played a big factor. And Tommy never looked quite comfortable sitting back to fourth, and Josh just took it easy, finishing his seventh, knowing that he just had to finish in the top nine to gain the championship. But not all was well sitting back there. Brett McCormick actually crashed right in front of him, running him off the track, and almost ended his weekend a little early, which would have been bad for the championship. But he hung in there, came around to take the championship, which is Josh's first, and he took it with 7 wins this year. So good job, Josh. Tommy came in second with 5 wins, and Jake Zimke came in third with 2 wins on the season. Now, the American Superbike class wasn't as hotly as contested as the Daytona Sportbike class, but the racing was still absolutely fantastic. It's, once again, some of the best we've seen in that class in America in recent history. It was exciting to watch. The parity between the motorcycles was great, and the racers really put it out there week in to week out. You know, this year was great for American road racing, and we got to see a lot of up-and-coming talent with the Super Sport Series. We got a lot of young kids who are going to be making some big, big steps here in the near future, and maybe even send them off internationally. So hopefully this year Duke puts out the season on the recaps, and some of our friends in Europe who couldn't watch this racing gets the opportunity to see what we're talking about, because this was some of the best racing we've seen all year. And it's absolutely exciting. It's thrilling. There's a lot of clean racing, not a lot of dirty racing. It was just really good stuff. All right. And finally, for some highlights of the 2010 season, we had the return of Eric Bostrom and John Hopkins, which is great because those are two big names in American road racing. And having them back only bolsters the sales of this whole entire thing. It was good to see both of them come back and do well. Both actually ended up with their fair share of injuries, but I'm sure next year it's going to be on with those two in the series. We also saw the return of form by Ben Bostrom. That was great to see. Getting that win at Laguna was something that was needed for Ben in the series in general, because having another top name like that, winning races and bringing the competition next year is only going to be better. And after 15 years of giving it all he can, Josh Hayes gets that Superbike championship. Just goes to show you, you got to take advantage of what's given to you. Nobody wanted to give Josh a shot. Yamaha gave Josh a shot. And within 2 years, he's got them a Superbike championship. Way to go, Josh. There was a bunch of new talent we got to see this year. The young kids, especially, even the 16 to 20 group in the Supersport racing. That racing was just amazing to watch. And speaking of which, we got to see our first woman win an AMA national event. It was exciting to see that Infineon, and I'm sure there are more to come. New fans came out this year. This racing was great. It brought out a lot more people than last year. TV ratings were up. And I gotta say, AMA and DMG really stepped it up after last year's debacle. And I'm only looking forward to 2011 more and more. And I'm excited, and all of you should be as well. But that's gonna do it for me until then. And it's gonna be a long winter, but until the Daytona 200 rolls around, we still got a few things to watch. But bring on AMA 2011. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, great. Thanks, Skylar, again for sending that in. It's short and sweet. And I don't think we have anything else to really talk about, do we?
I think I want to touch on Martin's rant. Martin helped us out with the notes, even though he wasn't able to join us. And because I hang out on UK and bulletin boards and whatnot and chat with people there, there is kind of a general revilement of one Charlie Cox who...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go with this. This is good.
Announces for the BBC. I personally am okay with him, but he does have a lot of euphemisms that it can kind of drive people crazy. The one just really sticks in my craw is a nightmare in a bubble car. But
there was also the Fox one. I completely don't understand from Laguna in 2008.
Yeah, that's Shot the Fox. Well, yeah. you'd have to kind of understand, the whole pear-shaped thing and things that we here in the States don't necessarily understand. It's actually kind of funny chatting with Martin all the time because he picks up on some of my sayings and I pick up on his, and I think we're like heading towards some bizarre middle ground. But anyway, the word is that he might move to Formula One commentary. And with a gentleman, Jonathan Lagarde, that might be released. And as Martin said, MotoGP fans world over are probably wailing and gnashing their teeth. Go, Charlie, go! But who knows? Because we had some information about that Charlie Cox was going to be bailing at the end of last year. As it turned out, Susie Perry was actually out. She's still very busy and still quite public. I'm okay with Charlie. I know you UK folks aren't either, or are not, but you guys kind of hate everybody that doesn't fit into your little paradigm world of motorsports announcing. We're a little bit more tolerant over here in the States simply because we have to, because ours is even more crap than yours are.
You guys are lucky to have some guys like that, you know?
And that's why we talk to people on the show all the time, like James Witham and Jack Burnicle, who we love to listen to. And, of course, Toby and Jules and those crew, you know, we've got our favorites as well, which, frankly, are, for the most part, your guys' favorites. We can at least meet on one thing. I am starting to ramble, Jules. I think that's the key to wrap it up. Is that the has the bell rung?
Ding.
Yeah, ding. We might have to get a sound effect in there.
Hey, that's a good idea. I've got some great dings.
And a fair amount of ding-alongs on our fans. All right, thank you for downloading the show once again. Please, once again, join us on our Facebook page. It's kicking big time over there. Lots of people talking. Somebody's on there all day, every day. Once again, obviously, feel free to send us email through our contact form at motogpod.com.
Or you can send email directly to motogpod@motogpod.com, and all of us get it.
Yep, if you guys want to just bypass the entire click through thing, motogpod@motogpod.com, and we'll all get it. And if we're all set, we'll respond to you. I try to get them out. And Jules, you've been very diligent this week, so thank you very much. I think that's it.
Just a reminder, Motegi is, Tokyo time, so don't forget. It's for a lot of people in North America, the race is going to be on Saturday night.
Yeah, I always get kind of stoked.
I do too, because, you know, it's like crack a beer and just watch the race live and, you know, and not have to wake up at 5 in the morning.
Exactly. You know,
for you, I think it's like 1 in the morning.
The bizarre thing is, you know, I've been getting up really early, like 5 to 5:30. To you, that's kind of normal with your kids. But so the first thing I do is just fire up the computer, hit, you know, a direct link into the video and let it run. Nice. At this point, it's even worse because I'll be tempted to stay up all night, which is really not good for me in my new job, which is going swimmingly, by the way. And I know some of you people have asked, it's going well. I wish I had more time to bring you more interviews, and I'll still be keeping on top of that.
Whew. Wow. Okay. Let's wrap it up then.
Wrap it up. I think we're done, dude. Cool.
All right. Thank you again for listening. And thanks to Skylar again for the AMA report. Thanks for all the people who sent in emails and the donations, and we'll talk to you next week.
Cool. And Martin, Jules did good. Pat him on the back next time you see him. All right, ciao, everybody.
Ciao. is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.
Well, here, you run with it for a bit, because I think I started babbling, actually.
Sorry.
Drop that one in your lap.
Yeah.